Well, I suppose my mother always said, God rest her soul, that she moved from saying that she saw the ad for a clerical officer in the Southern Health Board to saying that she filled up the application form for. And she'd probably, if we'd give her a few more years, she'd probably have done the interview as well. So, Jerry, so, as I say, God rest her soul, that's where it all started from. I actually worked for a number of years before that with Telecom when I was a technician. And I moved to Dublin for a period of time. And I was kind of anxious, I suppose, to move out of the big smoke and maybe move south again. And kind of as haphazardly as that, with making different applications for different administrative roles, I joined the Southern Health Board as it was then. And I came to work in Cork at the time in Glenmire, in Sarsfields Court, in St. Stephen's Hospital. And then sometime later, I came to work in Kerry, and our main offices at the time in community services was in Dini Street in Tralee. So that's kind of where it all kicked off. And 40 years, I suppose, it's a long time. I did a lot of different roles and functions since then. And I suppose I witnessed a lot of change in services over that period of time.
Mm. What was it like? What was it like when you started? I mean, I know it's a difficult question to answer now because so much has changed.
Well, I think one of the things that was there was the post came in the morning. Someone went through the post. They looked at it and it was given to the various different departments to answer. And that was kind of the end of the communication for the day, barring some phone calls. So when you think of that, just in the world that we live in of email and all different types of IT now, and the kind of requirement for swift response and clarification of things, that was the world. It was far more sedate than what it was now. I think importantly, on a more kind of a serious note around services, the one outstanding piece that, as I look back in 40 years, that I've seen is our slow but constant move away from institutional models of care. Mm. And if you go back 40 years ago, St. Finan's Hospital, just to use it as an example, was opened then, and it had 340 people living inside in that hospital. And it was called a hospital, and it was where people lived. Some of people lived most or all of their lives there. And I think one of the big sea changes that I have seen is that move away from those type of institutional models of care. And I don't mean to be negative to people who worked or who lived in those particular settings. That's what it was at the
time. It was of its time. Yeah.
It was of its time. And indeed, the idea of rehabilitation, the idea of people successfully living in the community, making decisions for themselves with supports from the health services and indeed social services, was pretty foreign enough even 40 years ago. I remember my colleague Etna McAuliffe, and she's setting up the physiotherapy service in the community here in Kerry, and the first community physiotherapy service that went out into the community hospitals. So that's not, when you think about the multidisciplinary of physio and occupational therapy and all of those therapies and nursing components that work as multidisciplinary teams now in the community, and which we take for granted, it's a big change.
Yeah, it certainly is. It was 83, 84 you came in. So you didn't know it then, but you were coming in at the tail end of, or not the tail, yeah, probably the tail end of those old massive institutions. But a lot of your work down through years was about that transitioning, getting things out into the community.
It was indeed. And I suppose one part of it that really gave me great exposure was I worked in developing briefs for projects that are now new developments in Kerry and indeed in Cork and around the country. But in Kerry here, I worked on the brief for Kymare Community Hospital, for the replacement of that hospital, for Dingle, for Tralee Community Nursing Unit, for the Accident and Emergency, now the Emergency Department of University Hospital Kerry. And even at most recent times, I was instrumental, I suppose, or worked at national level to ensure that we would secure funding for the replacement of St. Columbanus and district hospitals here in Killarney. And when you think about what did those services look like at the time, if you went in there, you probably saw a lot of people living in one room, 13, 14 people sometimes in some of those settings, actually sleeping in one room in their beds and touching off one another all but. And that was what was the service then. And when you think now, and you're a Kinmare man, and when you walk, if you walk into Kinmare Community Hospital, I think you'd say, is this a hotel?
Yeah, as apart from the maternity of it, the facilities.
Yes,
yeah.
and the privacy, and the sense that you can actually, if you need that level of 24-hour care, that it can be provided in such a super setting, and that your family and your grandchildren can come and see you there and sit inside in your room, and that you can bring in your paraphernalia, the things that really matter for you for your life, if that's what you need. Mm. I think that was just one of the significant type of dramatic changes that we have seen by way of replacement of services. And I suppose in the other piece, which was important really, was to move away from the mindset that that's the only thing that was there. So if you think about the home help service, the home support service that is there now, and we actually don't have enough of people to provide that service now.
Yeah.
But in my time, I can remember that service starting off, and it was considered as your friendly neighbour who voluntarily supported you or gave you some bit of assistance. And to think now we have moved it to be a place where it's a profession. It's to provide personal care to people mainly in their own homes. And the kind of level of support that people today all around the place are going into people's homes and keeping that high level of support.
And keeping them out. And keeping them out of community hospitals,
long stay, and hospitals themselves. And if we didn't have that firepower across the community, well, our hospitals, they might be busy now, but they would be completely overwhelmed if we didn't have that.
Yeah. Tell me about, I suppose, on the other side of it. And look, when you talk about the health service, it's hard to keep politics out of it. But administratively, it changed. The health board model, I remember when I started off in journalism, there was still health boards. There was health board meetings journalists used to go to, same as county council meetings. Then it became the HSE, and look, there's been a lot of criticism. It turned into a massive bureaucratic behemoth. What was it like to navigate that? And I'm not expecting you to trash your colleagues or, you know, but however you feel about, and it was political decisions made, and it's been talked about in the Dáil a lot, and a lot of criticism and people bashing each other in the head about the HSE and what it has become. What's your view on that change?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose I worked, as you say, for long periods of time in what was the Southern Health Board, and, you know, pretty much administratively and functionally, it worked as its own regional area.
It was its own kingdom.
Its own kingdom, and it had its own governance arrangements in place, and what the CEO and what the board decided was pretty much what was going to happen there. And it had its criticisms. Because obviously
it wasn't joined up across the country, and we are a small country,
and then creating the national system of the HSE was a painful process. And certainly I think the feeling on the ground from the services, and I've worked both at national and local level in the HSE, so I can speak to both sides of it. But I do think there was, like, on the one sense, there was a loss of local decision making and a local determination about where your resources and how your resources were used. And on the other hand, then there was greater oversight of the use of some of those resources, particularly from government in the areas like older persons or mental health or disability. That became more clearer. So it had that benefit. I do think that it's such a large organisation. Probably the trick that was missed was a significant investment in the whole world of ICT and, you know, pushing for more of that kind of an infrastructure. We are still asking our professionals to use the quill and ink for recording of a lot of detail belonging to patients and to people's information when we should have moved on significantly into a more computerized type of a model.
Yeah.
And I suppose that was probably one of the missed opportunities of going national. But it may have slowed down the whole process as well by actually not proceeding with that. So I think that perhaps was probably one of them. Navigating it, I worked at national level in older person services, and there was some power. You know, I remember we securing funding, and I was very much part of it at the time, for the replacement of the community hospital structure right around the country.
Mm.
And, you know, the value of that across the community, the fact that HICWA, who were the regulator, just, you know, were so condemnatory of the type of accommodation that was there, and that government had decided to put that plan in place. And now, 7 years later, you are seeing the fruition of such good developments right across the country. That's the power of having one single organisation. But you do lose some of the local decision making and proceeding with some very good innovative ideas.
Yeah, okay, that can be a problem. Tell me about palliative care and the development of that.
Yeah,
palliative care. We've seen a lot of progress in that over the last
years. Oh, I have indeed. And palliative care services are very much, I suppose, close to my own heart. And in a variety of different roles that I played over the 40 years, I seem to have come in and out of working very closely with palliative care services, kind of a key component sometimes. And I think if there's any example of where a service, which is palliative care, which in reality is something that people shouldn't want, not something that we actually want to even contemplate on, but it's such an important component of the services in Kerrain right across the country. And on top of that, it's so well supported by the public. There is something in it to be considered as to how you engage your public with the service that you provide. So, you know, when people are out there with their buckets and carry a hospice foundation throughout the whole county can go and ask the people for support, and that support is so readily coming to them, just shows the power of that. And I think the model is what I'm after here of, you know, the palliative care service itself. Everything we did according to proper clinical governance and proper clinical arrangements that were decided nationally. But everything on the ground was done with the cooperation of the public and by making deals with the public to say, if you can fund for the unit, if you can fund for the day service, we will come in as a HSE and we will give the revenue funding for it afterwards. And those really powerful arrangements that happened over a period of time brought palliative care inpatient unit and so many good services in palliative care services to the table in Kerry long before it has happened in other parts of the country. Yeah. That's the power of innovation locally and the power of garnering your public.
Like I said, sometimes it's hard, especially in the job that we do here in the media, to separate the politics from what happens on the ground and all the criticism. And one of the things I say is one of the problems with the HSE can be, or the health service can be, access to it at particular points. And the access to it, but that can dominate sometimes the quality of work that is happening across cancer service, the improvements. If you look in the wider sense of it, the life expectancy of this country has gone way, way up, very, very high, and is improving all the time. Now, that is a success of our health service, perhaps, maybe, in improving the health side of it. A lot of other things, the economy and lifting of standards has come into as well. But the issue of it is that presents challenges, and particularly in older people's care. We're talking this week about €12 billion of a surplus, and one of the things being intimated, well, we're going to have to put a chunk of that money aside for older demographic change. And what that mean is a lot of older people living longer. And we're seeing it already manifest itself in the nursing homes issue, accident and emergency, that access point I was talking about there, that's difficult and gets all of the criticism. One of the reasons for that is because we're living longer and we don't have the beds out in the community. Is that one of the biggest challenges facing the HSE that you're leaving?
It certainly is, Gerry. And I worked for a number of years nationally and all the personal services alone. And I think one of the things we would have said, looking at the demography over the next number of years, is that we were on the foothills of the Himalayas. And so as we saw the rate of increase of those people over 70, 75 and over 80, we've seen nothing like what we will see in the next 15 to 20 years. So I think as a society, as much as a health service, there is a time now to ask ourselves, how are we going to prepare for that? And I was very happy to hear the Minister for Finance and he talking about putting aside some of that funding for that particular purpose, because it is a reality. And we are seeing it already in, as you said, in emergency departments around the country. And again, I suppose looking back and harking back, I worked in Kerry General Hospital as a medical manpower manager. And if the accident emergency got busy, you rang Tom McCormack as the consultant surgeon, and you asked him to see could he make sure that there would be clearing of the decks, so to speak, of the emergency department. And he would come and make decisions, and his team, as to what happened to people. If you go to emergency department probably this morning, it's probably full, and it's probably full of people who are over 80 or over 85 and who will be the longest staying there in the emergency department until they find a bed for people. But you have to ask the question, has it been as a result of an accident? Has it been a result of an emergency? Sometimes it's a result of a predictable, you know, deterioration decline or decline
in somebody's health.
And I think we're going to have to, in the health services, we're going to have to look to say, where are the alternatives to accident and emergency or emergency departments for older people who, where that decline is a gradual decline as apart from a fall or a necessity to be done? Where is it when the carer and the and their ability to be able to do it has just been exhausted in the context of the supports that they might need? And how as a society are we going to do that? And like when you think about COVID and you think about how we garnered ourselves around supporting people, and particularly people who sometimes lived alone or were a bit vulnerable or isolated, we did that very well as a society. So I think we have to have a plan as to how we're going to deal with older people into the next 10, 15 years, and not to see it as a negative that, like, it is, as you say, a very positive story.
Yeah.
We are living longer. We are living healthier. We have made some of those life child decisions ourselves, and our health services has helped us to do so in absolutely every which way. But now the challenge is going to be access, as you have said. And we can't just keep building beds and saying that beds is the response. We're going to have more community-based services to maintain people at home as long as possible and as long as it's safe to do so.
Yeah, and plenty of challenges for our politicians to address there. Michael, look, there's been different scandals down through the years and different things that have gone wrong when any large organisation, one of those in recent years, which you would have had a lot of time dealing with from when you took over, was it 2021, would have been the CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. And looking at the situation on one level, it is a service that, you know, has been developed over the last number of years. It wasn't there when you started. There's been an expectation and a raising of standards which caused this to be a problem, and people expect better now of their health service. How problematic was that? How difficult is it for an organisation to recover from that and then to develop the service that you probably want to provide or people maybe expect?
Yeah, well, I suppose, first of all, I mean, as you say, when I came back to work from national roles, and I worked here as the chief officer in Cork and Kerry Community Healthcare, I obviously didn't know that that's what I was going to be facing.
Sure.
And it certainly, on a personal level, it was a huge issue because, this happened in Kerry, it happened to children in Kerry, and it was about services for my neighbours, for my community, and every aspect of my own ability as a manager, my own ability and my own experience had to be hands-on for the period of time that we were involved doing that look back in South Kerry CAMHS.
Yeah.
And I suppose one of the things, if there is to be any positive out of it, and I have to say again, and you did give me an opportunity before on the radio to apologise to people for the poor service they got and for what happened to them, but and I do so again today. But I do want to say that the value of Sean Maskey's report has been tremendous. And its ability not just in South Kerry to give us a pointer of how to provide much better services, but actually the influence it's having right throughout the country. And now with the Mental Health Commission involved as well in looking at that service, I have no doubt it will be seen as a landmark report for the purposes of making those children's services better. And I think the learnings out of it, not only in the context of CAMHS, and not only in the context of services, but in those kind of multidisciplinary, very specialist-type services that we've provided, the learnings out of it is widespread and needs a constant attention from the health service to make sure that we, our quality of our services are first and foremost delivered at the highest standard. Mm. So it was...
I know you can't speak as to what happens next because it's the job for the person who's taking your role and so on, but do you think that things will improve as a result of it?
I've no doubt about it that things will improve. And I mean, obviously, you know, before I left, I had to call for a look back in North Kerry CAMHS, and that will proceed over the coming periods of time. But in the overall context of matters improving for access to those services and the quality of those services, again, I go back to it, the Maskey report itself, is the pointer and is the way. And I think, you know, from even a political perspective, you know, politicians that would have contacted me and said, what are we supposed to do? I said, just implement MASCI, actually. If we can get to implement MASCI in all its aspects, we'll have a much better service.
Yeah. Speaking of politicians, do you have sympathy for the Minister for Health?
I think it's a very difficult role as Minister for Health.
And I say ministers.
Yes.
Because every one of them gets, as soon as they get into the job, they get clobbered over the head for the whole period they're there, and then they're gone and someone else is in, and you're back to the days of Brian Cowan going, this is Angola.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And Angola.
Politically. Yeah, a political Angola.
It must be, they must hear it in their ears when they're appointed, undoubtedly. I think that, of course, it's quite difficult. And I think the piece is that it's always a risk that there will be something of a scandal, that there will be something of something that comes around the court. There's never but a negativity around some of even the more positive things that happen. And it's a huge service and it's so wide that it can often be, the positive can be lost in it. So from a minister, the demands are huge, the costs are huge, and the access issue that you spoke about in a few different occasions are always the pinch points that will be...
Like every local authority in Ireland calls for the minister to come down and address the problems with their hospitals, that we want him to meet or she to meet. She's ignoring us. If the minister had to acquiesce to all of those requests, he or she would spend all of their time visiting local authority meetings across the country. That's just one example of the, and that's just the local pressure.
Yes, that's true. And so the pressure is constant and incessant, and of course it is. And I suppose the requirement for and the costs that are surrounding health services are always escalating. They don't ever go backwards. They always escalate. And the frontier of what is the next best piece for us in our individual health is going to cost more money at all times. And, you know, when you read even a service plan that the HSE will put out, it starts to get out of date very quickly because a new drug will have arrived, a new treatment will have arrived, and the pressure will be on for maybe some thousands of people that could benefit by this. So a minister is always going to be under that type of pressure. And I suppose in the political system, and I just do want to say something, after 40 years, I have dealt with politicians at local and at national level. I can't tell you the number of ministers for health and ministers of states that I have dealt with, and locally. And I have to say, I in general, my contact with them has always been very positive. And we've had harsh words, we have had disputes, we have not always seen eye to eye in it. But I have absolute. I think that anyone who goes into the political world, you know, it takes a certain type of person to deal with it. But you're not going into it, generally speaking, because you're so well paid. You're actually going into it because you do feel a responsibility to your public. And
they're trying to make things better.
They're trying to make things better. And I have to say, whenever they contacted me, or as they issued parliamentary questions or specific cases, I took great note of those always, because they were a barometer of what the people thought of us, and a barometer of where there were issues with us in terms of the way that we were delivering services.
Yeah.
The public were telling them, they were telling us, and it was a reasonable expectation that we would be trying to put some of those things right. And so I have That's a great time for politicians, I have to say.
Okay.
And, you know, but I will fight with them. I'll argue with them. But over the years... But I always had, you know, I suppose, great respect for their role and function, I have to say.
Michael, we're running short of time. You decided to leave 40 years. I know there's been a recruitment process. Your replacement has been appointed, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
What advice do you have for them?
Well, I suppose two things just to say. I've been thinking about retiring for the last 6 months. After 40 years, there are always reasons to go on. There's always something else that you...
I want to see this project out. And I want to
see my hand isn't on the tiller of this, will it go wrong or whatever? So it was a painful enough process for me to decide to retire. And even though I saw it covered elsewhere that I decided at a day's notice, obviously I didn't.
A lot of thought went into it
and a lot of time went into it. And I spoke to my colleagues in Dublin, the HSE, many months ago about retiring. So I just probably want to put a pay to all of that. For my colleague, for Tess O'Donovan, and for the future, it's a tough shift. There's no question about that. There is a lot of expectation and demand. But one of the great things that is there is that there's a fantastic workforce. And I do want to pay credit to the staff of the HSE. And while, you know, there's a lot, can be lots of negativity, the vast, vast, vast majority of people get up in the morning to go to work to do a really good job. And they go way beyond their requirements and what's in their job description to try to make it the very best for the public that they will deal with in the day, which is all we can ask of them to do. And I think I leave, I suppose, with an element of pride in the workforce that is there and that I work with over the years. I work with some fantastic people, some really skilled, intelligent, brilliant people, I have to say, that made my life a lot easier anyway, all through it. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from all of those people. And I just want to mark that, I suppose, this morning. So for the person coming after me, treat your staff well. Listen to your public and engage with your public, and that's as much as you can sometimes do. And it's really to show sometimes the leadership, particularly during the hard times, that's when you're called upon.
Okay, well, listen, Michael, thanks very much for telling us your story, giving us perspective on what it's like 40 years in our health service and all the changes. And thanks very much for all your work over the years.
And can I just say thanks to yourself, Jerry, and to Radio Kerry. I suppose, and I do want to mark one particular time period, which is all during COVID, and when we really wanted to get key messages out to the public. And when we found it very difficult to do that sometimes because the message was often changing.
Yes.
And because we couldn't do it in other formats. Your role was fantastic in terms of informing the people in their own homes and in their own houses. And we really do appreciate and did appreciate that all the way through. So thank you